Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman who has played a remarkable role over decades in various aspects of the war for the free world is our first guest. She was a special assistant when I first met her to former President Richard Nixon and studied at his feet for many years how diplomacy and statecraft operates. And she learned much and she has taught much through, among other things, a PhD program at Columbia, and through her extensive media appearances over many years, including on Fox News. And you know her well. Her name is Monica Crowley. She's a dear friend, a valued colleague, and always a welcome guest. And it's been far too long. Monica, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us. First of all, you've written this week about how Richard Nixon would perceive what has played out in the past few days in Afghanistan. I'm sure that you had many conversations with him. You helped him write memoirs on the subject. His experience of Vietnam would have shaped his perceptions of what is happening at the moment. But talk us through your own thoughts as well as your insights from him.
Well, thank you, Frank. I did publish a piece this week at The Spectator. You can find it at spectatorworld.com. I also posted it on my Instagram account at Monica Crowley _. So please follow me on Instagram. I post all of my op-eds there. And you will see this op-ed, which we entitled Saigon and Kabul, What Would Nixon Say? Because I am asked so often, Frank, on any kind of prevailing present day issue, what would Nixon think about what's going on? What would Nixon think about American leadership or lack thereof on any given issue? And this has happened for years since I began with President Nixon in the 1990s. So I think this particular issue I think Nixon's insights are incredibly invaluable because, of course, we saw the fall of Saigon in 1975. President Nixon had resigned the year before, so he did not preside over the fall of Saigon. In fact, the exact opposite. He set up the exact opposite conditions so that the fall of Saigon would not happen. The 1973 Paris Peace Accords, negotiated by President Nixon and Henry Kissinger, set up a conditions-based withdrawal from Vietnam to achieve what Nixon used to call a peace with honor, to make sure that all of the American sacrifices were not in vain. And he had these things pre-positioned. And then, of course, he resigned in 1974, which created a political crisis. And the Democrats then chose to undercut the entire military effort in Vietnam, even though we were on our way out. They chose to undercut the effort by cutting all of the funding. So they chose to pull the rug out from our troops in Vietnam, and that led to the calamitous ending to Vietnam and the fall of Saigon to the communists. And of course, we know the infamous pictures of our personnel being hurriedly, militarily evacuated from the roof of our embassy. Well, fast forward to the current president, Joe Biden, who was elected to the United States Senate in 1972. He took office in 1973. As one of his first acts, he actually voted to withdraw the funding from our Vietnam effort. And that, of course, led to our ignominious exit there. So Joe Biden is now responsible for not one, but two massive and dangerous humiliations on the world stage for the United States.
And why does that matter? Talk about the idea that many Americans, I think, have come to believe that these wars and other conflicts and problems around the world aren't our business. We should just stay home and tend to our knitting, and the rest of the world will leave us alone. I think that's not your view. It's certainly not mine.
So this brings Nixon back into the picture, Frank, and this is why I wrote this column, because Nixon used to say that if there were any upside to how the Vietnam War ended for the United States, it was lessons learned. So we should have learned a whole array of lessons, not least of which is that how we exit a military engagement matters as much as how we fight that military engagement. And it was the Caspar Weinberger rule that Colin Powell then later adopted, that if you're going to fight a war, you fight to win, and then you exit with certain conditions to make sure that the success that we achieve on the battlefield is locked in into the future. So the lessons of Vietnam, obviously not learned by the current president, in fact, actively disregarded. And this would have Nixon apoplectic, Frank. He would be so outraged by what is happening that we are doomed to repeating history because of the ignorance and failures of American leadership of the current president. The reason all of this matters is that after Vietnam, that humiliation and failure echoed through decades of American policy, where the United States was almost afraid to act on the international stage. Our leaders of both parties were afraid of American domestic opinion and so on. It matters that the United States plays the leading role on the stage. There's a point that I make in my column about after the end of the Cold War and the end of the bipolar international system, we got a hegemonic stability model where the United States was the global hegemon. We still are. We still are a superpower. But in that model, you've got to have strong leadership. Otherwise, the entire international system falls to pieces and you get conflict and instability and war and death and destruction, which is what we're seeing now because we've got weak American leadership. It matters because the international order cannot remain stable and without conflict and with relative peace without strong American leadership. Donald Trump proved that. Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, they all proved that. When you've got weak American presidents, Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, all Democrats, what you see is a collapse of that system, and it only brings death and destruction and despair to our doorsteps. And we end up, because we are the world superpower, we end up having to go in when it's far too late, and the cost to the United States in lives and treasure end up being far more than if we had just maintained a relatively modest commitment like we had in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that is so true and so important. And the thing that I know he would be very concerned about as well, and I think, again, we agree on this point too, is it's not just the immediate problem of the Taliban and what they will do to the people of Afghanistan and what that bespeaks of us having bugged out on the people that we had been working with and supporting over these years. At enormous cost to us, not least in lives. But Monica, there's also a host of other very dangerous adversaries, most especially the Chinese communists that are taking stock of the situation and I fear are very inclined to try to take advantage of it as well. What are your thoughts about the Chinese Communist Party perceiving and responding very dangerously to the perception of American irresolution, weakness, and, some say incompetence. I frankly think it's a wrecking operation rather than, simple ineptitude.
Yes, and I agree with you on that. I mean, whether it's the southern border, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's the out-of-control spending that is happening, this administration could stop any of these things and reverse course right now as we speak, and they choose not to. So the only logical conclusion is that they want this to happen. This is all deliberate. It's all being done on purpose. It is a wrecking operation. In terms of the CCP, I think they are already taking full advantage of the vacuum that we are leaving in Afghanistan and the mess that is right on their doorstep, which they see as a prime opportunity. The Chinese have already begun negotiations with the Taliban. They're already deep into talks. The CCP has already indicated they will recognize the Taliban as a legitimate government in Afghanistan. So they are fully ready to work with them. In fact, they're already on the ground. All of the advanced military technology and equipment that we left on the ground, which is that is one thing that is so beyond unconscionable, in addition to leaving Americans on the ground without any kind of support or exit. All of this is outrageous. The fact that this technology now is not just in the hands of the Taliban, soon to be in the hands of, if not already, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Iran, which is just to the west, and China, which is just to the east. All of our enemies are going to be deconstructing this technology and reverse engineering it, and I'll have it in short order. That is an outrage. It is treasonous in my point of view. But the Chinese have already stepped into the vacuum. Afghanistan is essentially, it's geostrategic in many senses, but for the Chinese in particular, it's so important for the rare earth minerals that they are using to dominate the satellite industry and cell phone industry, the chips that go into our cars. Afghanistan has an estimated $3 trillion worth. Well, the Chinese are right in there, the way they've gone into Africa and the Middle East. They want to exploit the natural resources and they want to use it as a geopolitical weapon. And we have allowed it to fall right into their hands. So not only now do they have that, but they are deeply emboldened by American weakness in the South China Sea with regards to Taiwan. Forget about Hong Kong. That essentially is a lost cause. The Chinese now are further on the march than they have been. And at least with President Trump, we had 4 years of an American president standing up to the Chinese strategically, economically, politically, culturally, and the rest. Now it's just a walk in the park for the CCP.
Richard Nixon got his start in national politics as a young senator who was very concerned about communist penetration of our government. When you look at the Biden-Harris administration and the numbers of people from the president himself, unfortunately, on down, in senior posts who have been compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. They've taken money in some cases. They've been working with them. They've been politically aligned with them. They've been doing their bidding and so on. What do you think Richard Nixon would make of the dismal state of U.S. counterintelligence and holding such people to account in a way that would, well, I think, prudently preclude them from being in such posts?
Yes, and unfortunately it starts with the current president who is compromised. His son is compromised, all blackmailable. It's beyond anything Nixon could have imagined. He'd be absolutely appalled that the enemy is within and in the highest levels of our government. And it's not just that, but now corporate America is completely compromised because they want the huge Chinese market. And so they are working hand in glove with the CCP at the expense of America's national interests and America's national security. Nixon would be, you know, I'm asked so often, Frank, about his views on China now. Nixon was incredibly adaptable. He changed his views as situations on the ground changed. So while he believed when he died in 1994 that the strategy of engaging with China, because if we encouraged openness through contact, that eventually the pressure would build on the CCP to change its ways. There might be a successful revolution in China, a democratic one through economic liberalization. Nixon really believed that, and that was a widely held belief for a long time. If Nixon were alive today, he would be appalled that that didn't work out and that he was so incredibly wrong, along with so many others, from Kissinger on down through every American president, right? But he would also have changed his view. And he would have said, look, obviously that strategy did not work. the Chinese took a different path and a very smart one for China. And so therefore, the United States needs to change as well and orient itself to China as the premier adversary of the United States. They're not a challenge. They're not opposition. They are an enemy of the United States and therefore should be treated as such.
You know, Monica, when we first met, when you were working with President Nixon, I remember your help in talking with him about missile defense, which was a prime example of what you just described. He was, along with Henry Kissinger, of course, the patron of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty of 1972 and supported the constraints that it put on us having an effective missile defense. But to his great credit, over the years, as he saw the conditions changing, as you've said, and Ronald Reagan said he wanted to take a serious look at having a national missile defense, indeed a global missile defense, President Nixon came around and said, you know, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty has outlived its usefulness and that he would support withdrawing from it, which, of course, President George W. Bush ultimately did. So this was something that I know you had your hand in, a good influence at his side, but this is a moment when we need fresh thinking about China for sure, and we must not engage in the kind of, well, inducement to aggression that the Biden-Harris team's policies, I believe, constitute. And I thank you so much for writing about this at The Spectator and for your commentaries and all the work you've done over the years, Monica, and that you are doing these days. And we look forward to visiting with you again about it all very soon. I know you've got another media hit, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you for your time today. Do come back to us soon. Next up, we'll speak with Naomi Wolf about vaccine passports and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. U.S. Marines proudly characterize themselves as no better friend, no worse enemy. Tragically, the Biden-Harris wrecking operation is encouraging the world to perceive our country as no better enemy, no worse friend. We should never encourage hostile nations to regard us with contempt, and longtime friends deem us as, at best, unreliable. But this is a particularly dangerous moment for such perceptions to take hold, as they are. Of special concern is the prospect that possibly China and or Russia, and for sure, the planet's jihadist Sharia supremacists are being emboldened by Team Biden's ignominious bug-out and betrayal in Afghanistan. The cost of abandoning the posture that Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump called peace through strength, and that our Marine warriors exemplify, can be needlessly and exceedingly high. Joe Biden must revert to this vital approach or get out of the way of those who will. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it's a great pleasure to say we're able to speak with a woman I've admired now for, well, some time, for having the courage to take point, as they say in the military, on a very, very important issue, and one that has brought her considerable criticism, and she has withstood it well and has pressed forward because she has a very clear-eyed understanding of just how high the stakes are for our nation and its people. Her name is Naomi Wolf. She has a PhD. She is an author of a number of books, 8, I believe, the most recent of which is Outrageous. She is the driving force behind a new tech operation called DailyClout.io. It happens that it is also a platform for a really important initiative that Naomi is leading, entitled The Five Freedoms. We're going to talk to her a bit about those efforts, legislative efforts, particularly at the state level. But I want to talk first and foremost with her about the cause that has prompted her to raise some very serious warnings for our country about its future, and particularly the prospects for freedom in America. Dr. Naomi Wolf, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. I couldn't be more pleased to have you with us. Let's start with the concerns that you have been expressing very forcefully, and I think properly so, about what are called vaccine passports and the mandates that prompt them to become presumably a means of, exercising very considerable control over the American people.
Sure. This is, absolutely catastrophic and very, very predictable, if you know anything about either technology or history. So, as you note, and the Five Freedoms campaign at Daily Cloud is, fighting this every single day with some successes, but it's a constant battle. State by state, city by city, sometimes business by business, there's a vast pressure, and I'm embarrassed as a lifelong Democrat to say it's pretty much from the blue side, although some, Republican governors, like my governor where I sit right now, Massachusetts Governor Baker, to his eternal shame and discredit, are going along with it. There's a tremendous campaign kind of like a military campaign, not just an opinion campaign, to pass, mandates or laws to coerce people, illegally to accept a vaccination. And I am not anti-vax, contrary to, efforts to, discredit me. But I certainly know the law, and I know human rights law. And it is totally illegal. It is against the Nuremberg Code to coerce people to receive any kind of medical treatment they don't want. It violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. It violates HIPAA to even ask people what their medical status is. It violates, every law about equal access on which our government is based, especially, after the civil rights movement was properly successful in guaranteeing equal access to all Americans, to discriminate.
And it turns out that there will be a fair amount of discrimination against people of color, as they say, as a result of these passports. Is that right?
Absolutely. Indeed. I mean, that's absolutely turning out to be the case in Harlem, where I was seeking to buy an apartment before this unfolded in New York City. 60% of people are unvaccinated. And it's a disproportionately or historically African-American community. All over the country, reasonably enough, people of color, given real medical experiments on people of color in this country, sadly, like the Tuskegee experiments, are disproportionately reluctant or choosing not to be vaccinated. And so now they are being kept out of, equal access to society, and how that is okay with members of the left who, claim to be for equality and human rights is extraordinary. Another thing that people are ignoring is that, many people with disabilities cannot take the vaccine. And so they're doubly discriminated against. And, but even so, I'm reluctant to move into these kind of details of the injustice, because the big picture is this is how you close down freedom forever, like forever. And I say this as a Jew. I've been reading the histories of Vichy France, the histories of Germany in the early 30s, and this is a very well-established technique to create restrictions, regulations. You have to check in with the authorities. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't. And there is no situation in history in which it did not result in the marginalization, demonization of one class of people. And, the next step is arrest, and the next step is eradication of one kind or another.
One of the things that I've been struck by is the phenomenon in China that is called the social credit system. Talk a little bit about, if you would, that social credit system, what it is, how it operates, and what the implications would be for a free society if it were, in fact, to become part of our polity.
Well, I just want to sadly note, Frank, that the Chen-style social credit system is now part of our American polity, as you put it, in the places where it's been rolled out. And what I mean is that the Chinese social credit system, about which I've been learning a great deal from people more knowledgeable than I about it, but you know, the essentials are pretty simple. Everyone gets assigned a score. And the reason that as a CEO of a tech company, Daily Cloud, I keep trying to warn people about exactly how catastrophic a digital pass, like the Excelsior pass, like all these passes are digital. They wouldn't be nearly as damaging if they were a piece of paper, you know, the kind that one gets in the past for to show vaccine status if you're going to a foreign country that has, you know, some infectious disease. The reason that a digital pass is so catastrophic and can shut down freedom overnight is that everything else can be loaded to it with no trouble at all. And you're seeing this happen. So in China, you know, everyone has a number. And if, you know, if you say something on social media that is critical of government, you know, your number can dip, you know, and that's tied to all kinds of other access, like access to your whole medical history is on your social credit kind of wallet, you know, and it's tied to payment and it's tied to access to transportation and so on. So, you know, this is a gigantic country of, you know, a billion people, and the authorities can find anyone within 5 minutes, partly because of this digital system. And it also controls, like, without this way of digitally controlling access to society, you would have dissent. You would have Tiananmen Square. You would have, you know, resistance and maybe even a revolution against the most tyrannical government, you know, of its scale on the planet. So that there is no secret. I mean, I know that discussing China has been kind of made marginalized in mainstream discourse, but there's no way to avoid the China issue because there are several bad actors. Excuse me. Who are not in lockstep on the vaccine passport, but it's been rolled out all over the world simultaneously. It's not just the United States. In fact, we're kind of holding out better than any other country, partly because of people like us, I'm going to say, and our supporters. But the bad actors are big tech, big pharma, and China.
Thank you for both clarifying why this is such a threat and for what you're trying to do to counter it. So take just a minute or two, if you would, to talk about the five freedoms and how people can participate in trying to protect them through your website, dailyclout.io.
I will. And just before I do, the last thing I want to warn people about is that what I do really want to tell everyone is that, you know, day by day, the news gets more terrifying from other places in the world. And in Australia, children are being rounded up and vaccinated against their parents' permission. And in Israel, a correspondent let me know, and I haven't verified it myself, but I'm hearing similar things from multiple sources in Israel, that children aren't allowed to leave the country without a committee of people who are not their parents. And in these kinds, and here in this country, children, you know, my teenagers are minor. They do not have the right to medical consent for virtually any other, you know, procedure. And they were rejected, you know, against their parents' permission. I'm in touch with actors who have been kind of putting their bodies between these, you know, mobile vans going to high schools and trying to protect the children who cannot consent, not old enough to consent, you know, just legally they can't consent. Once the state has your kids, you know, there's virtually anything you'll do to comply so that your child, you know, worse things don't happen to your child. So this is a very CCP style approach. Sorry. Yeah. You're afraid that they'll be taken away from you, but also, you know, it starts with an injection, which is experimental. You know, next it's who knows what, you know, sterilization, trafficking, like, history shows there's no limit once you, as a parent, don't have the right to say what happens to your child. So I just want to warn people that's how totalitarian systems like the CCP function. They break family ties, break family authority. And
the nuclear family. Yeah, they're all about it as part of, well, I think it goes back to Marx, but the Chinese Communist Party have perfected it, of course. So very quickly, we're almost out of time. Tell us a little bit about the Five Freedoms.
The Five Freedom Campaigns is on dailyclout.io, and it's freedom of assembly, no more mask mandates, no vaccine passports, open schools now, and end emergency law. And so we've got five really good draft bills to do that, and people are taking the bills and sending to their elected officials, and we've been successful in rolling back the worst of this legislation in about 16 states. It's a constant fight, but people can join us by supporting us on Daily Cloud. So thank you for letting me tell people
about
it.
And participate in the work, too. It's not just a question of financial support, though that would be welcome, I'm sure, but actually engaging in the fight, I think, is something that you're facilitating at dailyclout.io. Let me just take another, it's all vital work, and I'm so appreciative of you coming on to talk a bit about it. Let me just ask you, you mentioned in passing a moment ago that you are of the left. In fact, you've been quite prominent on the left for a long time, and that has been one of the things that I think has made your campaign in this regard so important, because you really demonstrate that this is not a partisan matter. This is something that is going to affect all of us and all of our freedoms. But I'd also like to just ask you quickly, as a woman who is not only of the left, but has been a very prominent figure in feminist circles, your view of what is happening now, or is in prospect of happening imminently, if it's not happening now, to women in Afghanistan?
I mean, words cannot express how appalling what we've done, what this administration has done, is in relation to women and girls in Afghanistan. As I've said elsewhere, in a situation like this, in war generally, and occupation generally by an armed force, but especially, of course, the Taliban with their, kind of medieval approach to women's rights and girls' rights and human rights in general.
I think that's charitable. I'm not sure that they have any rights, let alone medieval ones, but it's misogynistic at the zenith, I think.
Yeah, and as I've said elsewhere, I am, a big fan of Islam. I mean, I really, I've studied it. I've studied the Quran. It's a peaceful religion. It's a religion that improved on Judaism at the time in terms of women's rights, but there are subgroups that are just tribal, and their approach to women and girls is tribal, and the one of them. So you can expect, the kinds of violence that always happen when there's an occupied city. Like, you can expect mass rapes. I'm sorry to say, you can expect, horrible violence against women and girls, and
enslavement as well as physical abuse of all kinds. Yeah. No, it's appalling, and I fear that we may not know the full measure of just how horrific it will be, because I think they will go to great lengths to try to prevent the information from reaching the outside world. But it will be a lasting, I think, blight on this nation that we've allowed this to happen on our watch, as they say. We'll have to have you back, Naomi, at some point to have a proper conversation about Islam, and specifically Sharia, which is what the Taliban, of course, thinks they're implementing, and whether it's, as you've said, in the authoritative form, a blessing or a problem, but that's for another day. For today, I just want to say again, thank you, and encourage people to visit your site, dailyclout, that's clout.io, to find out more about what's happening to our country in terms of this effort to impose vaccine passports and all that will go with it, and how you can fight it by joining the efforts on the Five Freedoms front. I would also commend to you all the StopVaxPassports.org effort, which is really parallel and now, I hope, increasingly synergistic with Naomi's, which has a letter and petition and also a very important webinar, in addition to one that has helped shape all of our thinking about this, which Naomi did herself, one of many on this subject, I think, now. But Naomi Wolf, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back with updates and a chat about Islam at some point soon. Next up, we'll talk with the author of Woke Capital, Stephen Sukup, about the madness of investing in our enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. That and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I am pleased to say one of the people that I have come to know and admire greatly in the past year or so is with us to talk a bit about his important book, Woke Capital, and his larger work at the Political Forum on a subject that is near and dear to my heart, namely the extent to which the United States capital markets and the people who are investors in them are being used to underwrite and to make vastly more dangerous the Chinese Communist Party. His name is Stephen Sukup. He is a remarkable expert on these matters and a great contributor to the public policy debate, and it's a delight always to have him with us. Stephen, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Let's start with an individual that you've been profiling of late. He seems to me to really be one of the truly malevolent characters in this drama. His name is Larry Fink. He is the chairman, chief executive officer, I believe both, of a company called BlackRock. Tell us about BlackRock and why he has so much power, not only in the financial markets themselves, but in a whole host of others.
Well, BlackRock, Inc. is the largest asset management firm in the world. They have nearly $10 trillion in assets under management, which makes them an absolute monster. And Larry Fink, the CEO, is somebody who has, over the last couple of years, very publicly and very overtly dedicated himself to introducing political issues into the capital markets and using the leverage that that $10 trillion gives him to push his political agenda. Primarily, he's been pushing sustainability, which is, you know, he's pushing for companies to focus more on how they're going to transition to a zero carbon future, rather than to focus on their actual business. He's tried to make the case that this is good not just for the businesses to do, but for investors and for the world as well. But he's also moving beyond that into social issues. He has said specifically that he would like diversity to be a much bigger issue for BlackRock and the companies it invests in over the next couple of years. So he's very much a political player who has taken the leverage that the American people, essentially, you know, this is our money, our investment money, our retirement money that is invested with his company, and he's leveraging that to advance his agenda.
The thing that I find so stunning about his agenda is that on the one hand, Larry Fink is, as you've said, a big promoter of this idea that capital has to be woke, that it has to, you know, conform to what has been called the environment, social justice, governance, ESG agenda. And he's been a real enforcer of that in corporate boardrooms across the country now, using essentially the power of BlackRock's ownership of large chunks of companies. That's all happening on the one hand, Steve, but on the other, he is simultaneously driving American investors, often unwittingly on their part, into investments in China, which the last time I looked was not particularly good on environment, social justice, or any other kind for that matter, or governance. Am I missing something about how much of a disconnect there is between these two parts of the Larry Fink agenda?
Well, no, you're not. But the thing is, that's one of the bizarre aspects of this woke capital movement, is that most of the companies that are involved in this and that are the loudest about this in the United States are in fact tied at the hip to the Chinese Communist Party. Apple, for example, the biggest company in the world, is very much connected to the Chinese Communist Party. Disney is very deeply invested in China. So it's not just Fink, it's this entire woke movement.
Yeah, well, Fink certainly has a lot to do with it. And he's been driving it even more over the past, the past 6 months or so, and to the detriment of American investors. The thing is that, within the past couple of months, we've seen how little respect the Chinese government has for property rights and for the rule of law. The Chinese government has gone in and has just decided that some companies are too powerful, some people are too wealthy, some individuals need to be taken down a notch, and they've done that. This is the kind of thing that makes capital markets completely unsupportable. And yet, in the wake of this, the BlackRock in-house research institution declared on Monday that they believe that their clients should, in fact, triple their investment in the People's Republic of China. They say specifically that they do not believe that China is any longer an emerging market, that it is a market on par with the United States, that this is a bipolar world, and that if people are going to be invested properly, they need to be invested in both poles of this bipolar world.
Steve Sukup, you've given a lot of thought to this, and again, your book, Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business, makes this case very powerfully, it seems to me. But the idea that the Larry Finks of Wall Street, and he's not the only one out there, obviously, he just happens to be the 800-ton gorilla, are driving this idea that it's a bipolar world and you ought to be invested, you in the United States, ought to be invested in both poles, suggests a certain indifference to the threat that one of those poles, namely the Chinese Communist Party, poses to the other, and for that matter, to the free world and wider world beyond. What's missing here? How is it that people can be sold this, I think, anti-American agenda so blithely by a guy like Larry Fink?
Well, for me, I've struggled with that ever since I began, detailing what's happening with American business and with the rise of woke capital. But a great deal of insight was provided to me just a couple of weeks ago by hedge fund guru Ray Dalio, who, in the wake of the Chinese Communist Party's crackdown on Chinese businesses, put out a note that I think he published on LinkedIn, where he tried to explain why what the Chinese government was doing was simply culturally appropriate for China, why it was indicative of their desire to protect the Chinese people, and how we should just simply accept that because that's just the way they deal culturally with what they perceive to be external risks. And as I read that, I thought, this is the craziest thing I have ever seen. He is literally justifying concentration camps for the Uyghurs and the use of slave labor for the Uyghurs and violations of property rights and violations of the rule of law all throughout the country as, a normal way of operating and a normal way of a government protecting its citizens, and declaring that if we're not willing to get on board with that, then the problem's with us and not with the Chinese. And that's, as I said, that's absolutely insane, but that is in fact the mindset that drives a lot of these large financial services companies and their very Gnostic leaders.
But again, that is utterly at odds with their professed commitment to human rights and equity and all these other nostrums of the left that are prominent features of woke capital, is it not? And at the end of the day, you know, Jamie Dimon famously said when asked about losing $400 billion in American investors' money, not him exclusively and personally, but corporately and along with a lot of others. Well, that's life in the fast lane. I mean, these guys seem to have no regard, not only for the inconsistency of their own positions, but for the national security interests of the United States, or even, at least in the case of Jamie, the equities of their clients.
No, and I think that that a lot of these guys, Ian Dalio and Fink and Dimon, are victims of their own ideology. They have come to believe that American civilization or Western culture is no different and no better than any other culture. And so if we see what the Chinese are doing to businesses, if we see what the Chinese are doing to Uyghurs, and we try and view it through our Western lens, then we're misunderstanding what it is to be a part of their civilizations. So I think they're victims of their own ideology. They've bought into this cultural relativism that says, you know, it's okay if somebody else does these horrific things as long as I'm not trying to scold them for doing so, imposing my values on them. So I think these guys, this is a generation of people who would probably be the first generation to have grown up fully indoctrinated through the education system with cultural leftism. And I think that a lot of these guys embrace it wholeheartedly, and they've bought into it, and they're willing to use that in their business practices.
Steve, you and I are both friends and colleagues of Kevin Freeman, who I think is a terrific resource on these issues, the host of Economic War Room, and the founder of a group called the National Security Investment Consultants Institute. I think you're aware of this project. But basically, the proposition is that if Ray Dalio or Larry Fink or the guys at Vanguard or MSCI or others of these masters of the universe have an ideological bent, that's one thing. If it's wholly inconsistent with the values, for want of a better term, of their clients, that's another thing. And one of the efforts that this National Security Investment Consultants Institute that Kevin is setting up with Liberty University, and I believe will begin its training program next month, as a matter of fact, is designed to do, as I think you know, Steve, is to give investors an alternative to train their financial managers to understand the difference between ESG, Environment, Social Justice, and Governance, and LSV, as Kevin calls it, Liberty, Security, and Values, as a set of priorities, ideology, if you will, that is much more typical, I think, of the average American investor. So if they can have financial managers trained to avoid investing their money in ways that are absolutely contrary to their beliefs, their values, that could be an important antidote, it seems to me, to what some of these guys on Wall Street are doing in the service of our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party.
Absolutely. People need alternatives. I speak all the time with, not just professional investors, but with business owners who would like very much to take their company's 401k plan, which is managed by BlackRock, and put it somewhere else, have it managed somewhere that is more hospitable to their values and the values of their workers, and that isn't going to fund our enemies, number one, and put their retirement at risk by embracing political values, number two, but they don't have any alternatives. They don't have any choices. Well, it's important for them to have those choices, and good for Kevin for doing this. The more choices that we can offer people to get away from, you know, this monolithical block of woke asset managers, the better off I think we all will be.
I couldn't agree more. And last question to you, Steve Sukup. If there's any doubt about the nature of these investments, even if it's in companies that are in China that are ostensibly in the private sector, what you said earlier has to be really borne in mind that any company in China works for the Chinese Communist Party, many of them directly for the People's Liberation Army at that. And that what the Chinese have been doing of late that has cost American investors so dearly is just a very powerful reminder of that reality, is it not?
No, absolutely. You would think that BlackRock, of all companies, would understand that. BlackRock got burned pretty good, about a year ago with Luckin Coffee, where it turns out that their entire financial statements were fraudulent. There was simply no way for us to audit that because the Chinese government does not allow American auditors to audit Chinese companies.
And pursuant to a memorandum that Joe Biden helped negotiate, our stock markets don't require them, or SEC don't require them to provide those audited products either, right?
Absolutely. And now what they want to do is impose even greater disclosure requirements with respect to diversity and sustainability and plans for a carbon neutral future on American companies, while again allowing Chinese companies to get away with not having any sort of verifiable audits on these things. So essentially what they're doing is putting American business at a severe disadvantage to these Chinese companies that, could be making up whatever they want to, and there's nothing that we could do about it.
America last, I think, is how this is coming to be described. Steve Sukup, thank you for joining us, and I'm very excited that you're going to be on our show this weekend on the Real America's Voice Network as well, our television program entitled Securing America. It's a great chance to visit with you now on several different platforms, and I really appreciate your willingness to let us do that. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for Woke Capital and your terrific product at the Political Forum. They're all vital to our situational awareness, as the military says, about the threats of our time. Keep up the good work, my friend. Come back to us soon. And I hope the rest of you will do the same on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with a word about a truly great American patriot in urgent need. Rich Higgins served in the U.S. Army and as a key civilian Pentagon official and senior strategist on President Trump's National Security Council. After he left the NSC, Rich continued advising Mr. Trump and others about the threats we are facing from enemies, foreign and domestic. He chronicled his experiences over the past 20 years fighting for America First in a terrific memoir entitled The Memo. Now this courageous freedom fighter is gravely ill due to severe complications caused by the Chinese Communist Party virus. He urgently needs help to defray the enormous costs of successive surgeries and a prospective organ transplant. I urge you to join me in contributing to a GoFundMe campaign named Medical Help for Rich Higgins. That's Medical Help for Rich Higgins at GoFundMe.com. God bless you, and Rich Higgins.